I felt that I needed to make sure that I could demonstrate that we could do the job. Mm-hmm. People who were brown like me could do the job. Mm-hmm. And you know, I didn't want to be the excuse for any hiring authority to mm-hmm. say, look, he couldn't get it done. You know, he couldn't get it done at Eastern Michigan. He couldn't get it done at Iowa State or mm-hmm. wherever. I didn't see it as a burden. I saw it as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I saw it as a challenge. It drove me, you know, to try and be the best that I could be inquisitive and curious. And so I learned a lot fast.
This is Tim Brown, host of the Be a Baller podcast. And I'm excited to have with me today as a guest at the athletic director at The Ohio State University, Gene Smith. Gene has been over four decades of athletic administration experience. But most importantly, Gene has committed to helping that next generation, paying it forward, as we say. And yeah. Gene has truly done that. So I'm excited about this conversation today to talk to a fellow Clevelander.
That's right.
Browns fan.
That's right.
Cavs, Indians. Let's go.
That's right. Let's go. We're glutton for punishment, aren't we, Tim? Although I like the Brownies this year.
Oh, no. We're going to be in Vegas now.
That's right. Yeah.
We're going to be in Vegas now.
I love it.
Yeah. All right. Welcome, Gene, to the
Thank
show.
Thank you, Tim. Man. I appreciate it. Yeah.
You know, growing up in Cleveland, when did you fall in love with sports?
You know, really, it wasn't until high school.
Wow.
You know, I really fell in love with it because we didn't have organized sports mm-hmm. in the public school system I was in. Mm-hmm. You know, we played the street ball, all that
right,
stuff.
But, right.
When I went to Chanel, you know, they had organized sports. And it was a challenging time for me. So I dove straight into it and mm-hmm. And wrestled and played baseball, played basketball, ran track. I did it all. Mm. And obviously football was the one that I fell in love with the most. Mm. And it was really in high school where it became kind of my passion.
Mm. How was that experience leaving the neighborhood? Because you're a Kennedy yeah. guy. I'm a Shaw
right.
guy.
Yeah, you know, right.
And we beat up on y'all all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
But that Senate was good.
The Senate was a real
that
deal.
Real deal. How was that? How'd you end up at Chanel?
Yeah, my dad sent me down in the ninth grade after mm-hmm. you know, I was getting ready to leave Charles W. Elliott. And he said, look, you're not going to go to John F. Kennedy, which was the natural rite of passion. He just said, look, you're going to go to Chanel High School. I didn't know where it was. Mm-hmm. And you're going to catch the bus over by St. Henry's. Mm-hmm. And you're going to bus out to Chanel. And it was all boys, all white. There was three black kids in the class at that time. In the school at that time, and I think he wanted to separate me from where, you know, me and my boys were going. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we were trying to survive in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And there were things that occurred, and I think he saw it, and he just wanted me to be in a different environment. And, you know, at the time I was pretty angry. It was a hard transition because it was all white. I was not Catholic. And it was really challenging for me, and sports became my outlet. So it was right after the civil rights. This was 1969. Mm-hmm. So it was really a challenge for me, but it was the best thing for me, and I'm glad he did it.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about who were some of those coaches who were kind of role models?
Yeah, you know, you know, I had in high school, I had some really good coaches. Joe Lynch, the basketball coach, was probably the best one. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I hit a kid in a basketball game. I punched him. And,
oh, Lord.
And Joe set me down. And, you know, we established a great relationship after that.
I'm sure.
So,
after that
it was my first year. So, you know, I was so frustrated with so many different things, and I let
right.
it out. And
right.
So he taught me a lot. And then I, you know, there was another one by the name of Kerry Volkman in football. He was just great. And Bob Spicer. There were so many high school coaches that were impactful. But, you know, when I got to college, it was – Eric Parsegian and our head coach was pretty impactful. Wow. And the defensive line coach, Joe Yanto, was really impactful for me. So I was blessed.
Hey there, Clark Kellogg here. Building a legacy usually involves meeting the unique needs of others and being part of something bigger than yourself. That's why I love First Merchants Bank. First Merchants believes that helping communities prosper means more than just providing banking services. It means offering accessible financial education, expanded access to home ownership, and partnerships with local nonprofits to help raise up neighborhoods and lift families out of financial hardship. For resources and tools available to you, visit www.firstmerchants.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You know, you played defensive end in Notre Dame for 4 years on a national championship team, you know, all that kind of stuff. Can you talk about, you saw excellence.
Can you talk about
what excellence, because these young, I don't think these young guys really understand what excellence is. Yeah, you know, they think just, you know, getting a lot of likes and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Can you take us inside? Because, you know, we see Notre Dame, we see all that. Yeah. And you were there. You talk about Eric Parcega. Yeah, you dropped names there. You know, take us inside there? What is excellence?
No, you know, it's funny. When I went from high school to Notre Dame, we won the championship my freshman year in 1973. Mm-hmm. Beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, and we were undefeated. And so I walked into a situation where I saw excellence at its best. You know, there was a great tight end by the name of David Casper. They called him the ghost. He played for the Raiders. And he was so committed to doing everything that he could to be the best tight end in the country. And so I saw him work at it and saw him start practice before everybody else. So all those little things that those who are at the top of the pyramid do to be the best, I witnessed in my first year. Mike Townsend was a great free safety. He was always the first one with the ghost, with our tight end, Dave Casper, and then he was the last one to leave. So I just saw all this excellence, and it inspired me. And inspired others. Also, I had a roommate who was, you know, the best high school player during his time, and Ross Browner at Warren, Ohio. He ended up playing for the Bengals, and he was actually, I think he was third in the Heisman Trophy 1 year, and won the Lombardi, and Ross and I would work out all the time. And, so we used to, we'd come stay at our house in Cleveland, and we'd go into Shaker Heights and run, because they were the only ones that had a polyurethane track. I just saw, you know, top of the pyramid student athletes, you know, invest in themselves to be the best.
You also had an experience as an assistant coach.
That was great.
They won an undisputed national championship. So you had the player deal, you had the coach deal. Yeah. So how did that shift go from being a coach to athletic administration?
Well, I didn't aspire to be a coach. My degree was in business administration.
Okay.
And that Dan Devine at the time asked me to stay on and be a graduate assistant. So I did that. And then he promoted me full time after my first semester. And so I coached for 4 years. And then they brought in Jerry Faust and he didn't hire me back. And so I decided I would just go do what I wanted to do, which was be in business. So I went to work for IBM. Selling computers in the early 80s to manufacturing and distribution industry. And then the defensive back coach at Notre Dame, a gentleman by the name of Paul Schultz, God bless him, passed away. But he called me one day and said, hey, Gene, he had become the athletic director at Eastern Michigan University. Mm-hmm. And he called me and said, Gene, I have this position, assistant AD position. I need somebody with business background. I need somebody that understands football. He had just hired a football coach. And he wanted somebody that he could trust. So he talked me into it. I left some money on the table at IBM. I didn't love it, but you know, I went, and he taught me the business. And 2 years later, he retired, and ultimately they promoted me. So I found my career path, and it's forever indebted to him for the opportunity he gave me, everything he taught me. And, so I was blessed to have that relationship.
What would you say was one of those life lessons that you learned from him that you still carry on today?
I think for him, he was interesting. He was not the people person that I am.
Okay.
He was the detailed person. And so I learned to pay attention to the details. I was a salesman. You know, I was selling IBM computers in the 80s when everybody was scared of computers. They thought they were going to replace them. And so he was the guy that, you know, taught me around about details and compliance and things of that nature. And so I became really detail oriented, with, his teachings. And, you know, we talked football all the time. So, you know, that was, something that, you know, I'm blessed that I had a leader who understood the sport. And because in the collegiate landscape, you know, it's football and basketball that that drives it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was really good in that space as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, in 1985, Arizona State made history. Mm-hmm. They hired Charles Harris as the first Black African mm-hmm. at a Power Five school. And then 8 years later, you were hired mm-hmm. as a second at Iowa State. How was that being a trailblazer? What was that experience?
You know,
like?
It was... You know, it's funny, for Charles and I were the only two at the time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, we go to meetings and I would, you know, I knew that certain people didn't want us in the room.
Mm.
And you knew that. Mm. And but there were people who embraced us.
Yeah.
But there were times that Charles wouldn't be at a meeting and I'd be by myself. So that was a little strange.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, my mom always taught me to rise above everything. Mm. You just rise above it all. And so... you know, I fought through, you know, challenges, that where people didn't want me in the room or want me around or want me a part of, didn't want me as part of a working group. But I was fortunate that I had three people that dragged me in and took care of me. One was Cedric Dempsey. He was the athletic director at Arizona State, mm-hmm. became the, president of the NCAA.
Yeah.
Another one was Dallas Dodds. He was, the athletic director of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And, but a main player, was Michael Cleary from Cleveland.
Mm.
He ran the National Association of Collegiate Directors of Athletics, which is still in Cleveland on the west side.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you know, he, again, God bless him, he passed away, but he pulled me into committees and placed mm-hmm. me on committees. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because I was from Cleveland. Yo, he was a Notre Dame fan.
I got you.
So
yeah.
I think all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So those three kind of pulled me in and gave me opportunities that I otherwise would not have gotten
mm-hmm.
because there were people who didn't want me there. And it was the same for Charles. Charles mm-hmm. was older, but it was the same for him.
Mm-hmm. You've also said this, that I can't fail.
Yeah.
It can't be. I couldn't be the Black athletic director that didn't make it.
Right.
I always felt I didn't want that to be an excuse for
That's
not
right.
to hire another one. So why was that so important to you?
Well, you know, at that time, you know, we didn't get opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of like not just in athletics, it was in different industries. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that I needed to make sure that I could demonstrate that we could do the job.
Mm-hmm.
People who were brown like me could do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I didn't want to be the excuse for any hiring authority to
mm-hmm.
say, look, he couldn't get it done. You know, he couldn't get it done at Eastern Michigan. He couldn't get it done at Iowa State or
mm-hmm.
wherever. So I didn't see it as a burden. I saw it as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it as a challenge. It drove me, you know, to try and be the best that I could be inquisitive and curious. And so I learned a lot fast.
Yeah.
And, but I, you know, that was always a part of me was, just to make sure that I didn't fail so I could open the doors for others.
Mm-hmm. And truly you did that. You know, you have quite a tree, quite a legacy.
Yeah, I'm blessed.
A tree.
Yeah,
you know, people,
yeah.
people talk about Bill Belichick and his coaching tree or Purcell's Bill Purcell, his coaching
yeah.
tree. But I'm looking at yours, you know.
Yeah, I'm blessed.
I'm going to call the road now. We got Patrick Chun,
yep.
first Asian-American AD at a Power Five Washington State.
Yep.
You got Martin Jerron, spent 3 years at Boston College, UCLA.
Yep.
Now he's returned to Big Ten next summer. You got Ben Jay. You got
yeah.
Heather. Man.
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
How did that make you feel?
It was great. You know, that was pretty intentional, Tim. So
okay.
All four of them worked with me at Ohio State.
Oh, wow.
And they were all that was my leadership team. And they all aspired to be athletic directors.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's part of my job.
Mm-hmm.
And all the supervisors of our department understand it's part of their job to help people get to where they want to be.
Right.
And so we had a strategic plan. They helped them be ADs. I remember sending them to the North Carolina 1 year because you had North Carolina, North Carolina State, Wake Forest, all of that right there.
Yeah.
And I called my colleagues at those schools and said, hey, I'm sending down a group and hopefully you can spend time with them and teach them
mm-hmm.
what you know and introduce them to other people in your department so that they can learn from other places, not just me. And so I flew in Joe Castiglione from Oklahoma, a good friend who's the athletic director. I flew him in and did a session with them and a couple others to teach them about how he became an athletic director and his leadership style. So there were a number of things that I did to try and give them the growth that they needed. And But that's always been a part of me. You know, Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, used to be my associate at Iowa State. He was my main fundraiser, and he aspired to be an AD. So I taught him all. When a visiting team football team comes, the mm-hmm. athletic director usually comes on Friday night.
Right, right.
Go visit time with them. Go spend time with them. Yeah. You know, or when we go on the road, make sure you if you go with me, just make sure you connect with the athletic director at that place and tell them you only need 15 minutes of mm-hmm. your time. Next thing you know, they'll give you 45. Exactly right. So, but anyway, so, you know, it was important to me to use my opportunities to give other people opportunities.
Right.
And, you know, back in the day in the good old boy system, you know, there weren't a whole lot of us mm-hmm. who were making calls for people.
Mm-hmm.
So when I reached a level in this career where I felt comfortable presidents would take my call, that's what I did.
That's big.
Yeah.
I hear a lot in our conversation about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to young people or person, even anybody's listening to mm-hmm. this podcast? Why are relationships so important?
Yeah. You know, I would tell young people, you know, people are the heart and soul of all that matters in life.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that you connect with people,
mm-hmm.
You know, you yourself have to have the highest of values, integrity mm-hmm. and respect for others. But people are the main source in our society for us to be successful ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Through the eyes of others, you see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't establish relationships with people and empower them to help you see what you don't see, your blind spots, then you're not going to get better.
Mm.
And so it's so important for everyone in our country to do everything they can to establish relationships. I tell people I have a purpose. Every day I have a purpose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I have a mission as well.
Mm.
And my mission is to be missed.
Wow, that's deep.
You can't be missed if you don't have great relationships.
Wow.
You know, we all have people in our lives that, you know, we're glad they're gone for whatever reason because they behave in a certain way. But if you aspire to be missed, you treat people the right way, you open up to people, you hopefully create an opportunity for people to open up to you. You be respectful. You be honest. You know, it's you be nice. It's so easy to be nice, Tim.
Wow.
It's so easy to be nice.
That's good.
It just drives me nuts when people are so disrespectful or just not nice. I don't know. I think it's easy.
Wow. Be missed. I like that.
That's it. That's the mission.
Like that. That's the mission. That's good. Be missed. You know, you are... the word is that you fundraise is one of your major gifts, being able to raise money.
Yeah, that's what we do.
And as we're sitting here thinking about your career, listening to you talk about that IBM selling computers.
Yeah.
So you brought that to the deal.
And so I know, true.
And since you've been at Ohio State, you raise a lot of money for different facilities. And most of it's been private funding.
Right.
Private funding. So how have you been able to do that?
Well, it gets to what we were just talking about. It talks about relationships. And so listening is a critical skill in fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times people, you know, don't understand that you got to really tune in to what is a person interested in.
Mm-hmm.
You may go into a fundraising call and you have a particular thing you're trying to sell.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't ask the right questions and listen, you know, you might understand that they're not interested in what you're selling,
gotcha.
But they might be interested in something else.
Mm-hmm.
They might, you know, you might be trying to raise money for a building, but they might be interested in scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So, asking good questions and being curious and being respectful and you know, doing a lot of that in listening. And then 99.9% of the time, you're going to hear a person's passion.
Mm.
You really will. You'll learn it. And then you, from a fundraising perspective, you try and guide that passion to, you know, a fundraising opportunity.
Mm.
I always tell my teammates in development, you know, don't try and force somebody to give to a capital campaign facility when they're not really passionate about it because they'll regret the gift.
Mm.
And you want them to cherish what they just did. And so, anyway, so it's listening, establish a relationship, listening. just being curious.
The team at the Financial Solutions Network is proud to partner with Tim Brown and bring you this episode of Be a Baller. Our mission is to share generously of our time, talent, and financial resources to help our clients develop financial plans and wealth management strategies that allow them to live the lives they imagine, while connecting them with experiences and people that enhance their quality of life. FCA is one of those organizations by helping young men and women through the development of their personal faith. The Financial Solutions Network is an independently owned and managed wealth advisory firm based in Worthington, Ohio. We are a multi-generational professional team of advisors with a combined 83 years of experience teaching and managing financial strategies for individuals, families, businesses, and institutions. We would be honored to help you plan your financial journey. Contact us at 614-505-3025 or visit our website at tfsn.net.
Now, we got the soft-spoken Gene Smith on the show.
Mm-hmm. You do.
Defensive lineman, I'm sure you was really having a good time at the game.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I was going after it. Yeah, yeah. Every now and then that Cleveland comes out. 178th and Harvard comes out.
Oh, that's right. Could you tell all this? What is your leadership style?
Yeah, you know, Tim, I don't have one style. Okay. I use different styles kind of seamlessly in different measure depending upon the business situation. Mm-hmm. There's a great article, 1988 Harvard Business Review. There was a gentleman by the name of Dan Goldman, and he was going around the world doing a survey of the top 400 CEOs around the world who had been very successful. And he was going out with the intent of trying to understand, you know, what's the one leadership style that they implied. Employed, and he found out that they used multiple leadership styles, and depending upon what they're dealing with. And I remember reading that article; it was only like 3 pages. But he said the one thing they all had in common was a high emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence.
They were very self-aware. Mm-hmm. They were able to self-manage. Mm-hmm. And they were able to evaluate the social environment, the group dynamics. Mm-hmm. But you have to be self-aware and be able to self-manage in order to evaluate everybody else. And so, you know, there's the authoritative style of leadership, the democratic style, the coercive style, the pace-setting style, the affiliative style, and there's another one I forgot. But at the end of the day, those styles, for me, just kind of happened naturally, and I learned about them, and it's so funny. As an athlete, you do that anyway, because as an athlete, you learn things in the group dynamics that a lot of people don't learn. You learn how to work with people from all walks of life. You learn how to be vulnerable. If you really pause and think about the experiences that you have as an athlete, and you bring them to the intellectual level, you got a lot. And actually, those the leadership styles, many of them I learned as an athlete.
It's good. You know, after 19 years, you're retiring from The Ohio State University. You have truly left the university in a great space. What are some of the things that you're most proud of during that time? And there's been some ups and downs. What are those things you're most proud of?
You know, the winning always matters. You know, the championships that many sports have won. But I'll tell you, Tim, I call it the light bulb moments. You know, I've always had a passion for creating an environment where we develop the student athlete holistically, not just their athletic talent, but making sure that they learn in the classroom, they compete in the classroom, they develop as people. Many of them don't come in with defined values. You know, they family's a part of their value system, and many of them, God's a part of their value system, but they don't, the others, they haven't really defined. You know, a lot of times with my freshmen, I'll ask them in their first session, how many of you have lied before? Obviously, they all raise their hands. And I said, how many of you lied the second time to cover up the first lie? You know, most of them raise their hands. And I ask them, how does that feel? And it's so easy to just tell the truth. People are forgiving. So you go down these paths of teaching them the value of integrity and honesty and why that's so important, along with your family and God. So you go through those things. And my moments that I'm most proud of is those light bulb moments when I see a behavior modification occur, and you know that student athlete flips the switch, or in the classroom when they're not committed in the classroom, and all of a sudden you see the indicators, and all of a sudden then they flip the switch,
right,
and they understand that they got to do better in the classroom. So I've seen a lot of that with a lot of our student athletes, or you know, we had a gay wrestler. Who struggled, and I remember when he came out publicly, and you know, it was a big weight off of him, and he did better overall as a human being and better in the classroom. There's so many things that these young people deal with today. That when we were coming up, you know, we just had to be resilient.
We did. We really did.
We did.
Nobody really cared.
Nobody cared. Yeah, no, they didn't care. And so you just had to get through it.
And
I remember I was going to go home. I was going to quit school. And, and Joe Yonto, the defensive line coach, caught me. And, you know, he sat me down for a long time and told me, you know, by the way, you know, when you drive home to Cleveland, you know, your dad's going to just make you turn around and go home. Come back here.
Come back, right.
So I'm like,
you're coming in here.
Yeah, you're right. So back in the day, that's what we deal with. So today it's a different world for our young people. So we have to go to where they are and understand where they are and then help them get through whatever they're dealing with. And so those things I'm most proud of is those light bulb moments.
That's good. You know, this is a podcast about a lifelong legacy. What is the legacy of Gene Smith?
You know, I don't know, Tim. That's got to be defined by somebody that when I leave, and I never think about things in that way. I've always just been trying to do my job and do it the right way. And, you know, who knows what somebody will ultimately define as my legacy. You know, I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll be around what we talked about earlier, the people. You know, that I was respectful, that I treated people the right way, that I helped young people be the best that they can be. That's one of my purposes, is to wake up every day and make sure we create an environment for that talented and gifted athlete whose parents gave their daughter or son to us to help develop, that we create an environment where they're truly developing in so many different ways. So, you know, a lot of people will talk about the wins and losses and the money raised and all that, but I hope it's more around the student athlete part.
That's good. You know, as we come around the corner, I always ask all our guests this. You know, people describe you as some call you Mr. Smith, athletic director, your husband, father, grandfather of seven.
Eight.
I saw the list. You know, you got them 1, 2, 3.
That's right.
You ain't got no Deion list, do you now?
No.
Next year, no. Yeah. You know, this guy's a grandfather,
that's right.
Mentor. How would you describe yourself?
You know, I think I'm just trying to be as good a person as I could be. You know, I'm driven. I want to be the best at anything and everything we do. But I'm probably a low-key kind of guy, unless I have to, you know, go street on somebody, which is rare. But I just have a lot of respect for people. And I don't know, I just see myself more as that kind of, you know, kind and gentle guy. And what you see is what you get. You know, I'm pretty vanilla. You know, I'm not hard to read. So I would describe myself that way. I'm tough when I have to be. You have to be. But I'm tough when I have to be. And I'm never the smartest guy in the room. Never have the highest IQ, but pretty doggone good with people.
Well, Gene, I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tim.
It's been a great, great interview, man. I got my light bulb moment. I was thinking about my moment.
Yeah, you always have them.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. You know, I had a couple of talking to you. Well, it's been a blessing.
Well,
I want to thank the audience for listening to a Be a Baller podcast with your host, Coach Tim Brown. And we want to thank Gene Smith for enlightening us and encouraging us. And lastly, we want to thank you for your service.
Well, thank you
for your service to The Ohio State University and other schools you've been at. But most importantly, I want to thank you for making sure that the field is getting leveled.
Thank you. Yes.
The field is getting leveled. That yes, people so have opportunities, you know, mm-hmm. and for you reaching back and pulling the next guy up, and then you passing that on to that guy. Now it's their
That's
turn.
Right. That's right.
Get the next one by your example.
That's it.
By your example. So we want to thank you for your time and
thank
go
you,
Bucks.
Tim. Appreciate you. Go All Bucks. Right. Yeah.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share this podcast with family and friends. Be a Baller podcast is available on all major podcast stations. Be sure to come back next week as we continue to discuss on how to build a lifelong legacy. Until then, don't forget to be a baller. This podcast was created by Coach Tim Brown and produced and recorded by the video production class of Worthington Christian High School.